Hi, my name is Matt.
I'm Matt.
Hope everybody can hear me. Here we are. We got through COVID. We thought we'd be back here again. It's a miracle. It's also a miracle that we're back in our space again in La Cañada. Whew, that's been really special. Everything's going fast again. Everything's moving. So I'm really honored to be here tonight and be asked to speak. I think I'll start off like how I got here and what happened and what's going on with me. So I got in the rooms starting in 2014 because my girlfriend at the time that I was living with, was drinking. Can I lower this mic a little bit? It's kind of weird sitting in my face.
Yeah.
It's awkward. How's that? Can you hear us now?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So I got in the rooms because I was, it was in 2014. I was living with this beautiful girl. You know, I struggled relationships. I hadn't been in a relationship for a long time. I think I was 36 years old. I had run my life into the ground pretty much at that age. I was in a serious desperation mode in all parts of my life. And so that's how I got into the rooms. A guy that I was starting to work with, had recommended me to get in the rooms. So I came in and I was really confused and didn't really understand what was going on, but I was told it would make her better. So that's what I started doing. I started going to the rooms, just sit in the back, hopefully it would make her better. And it did, you know, things changed, kinda, you know. We got married in 2015. I realized by coming to the rooms that I am madly in love with alcoholics. I was able just to sit in the back of the room and say nothing and not be seen and realize that like all my relationships, just by listening to it, were all alcoholics. All the girls in college, girl in high school, is dead now that my first girlfriend died 2 years ago. And I'm watching a lot of people die actually now. So I was able to get that kind of cleared up without talking to anybody or doing step work. So I was able to say, okay, so I get to pick my alcoholic. So why not pick the one I want? And that gave me the tool to really, you know, move forward in this relationship with my girlfriend at the time. Because I thought, well, I'm gonna end up with that alcoholic anyways, and I really like her, and I'm getting older, you know, I felt it was like my last chance to make this work if I'm gonna be in a relationship. And I was desperate, you know, I didn't have a job, I really didn't have a home, I had nothing. And I think maybe I started seeing that something was severely wrong, you know. So, we got married in 2015. And she was still drinking. She drank at her wedding. And it was about three months in May. So we got married in January, and in May, she went out one night and lied to me and ended up going to some other guy's house. And by the time she got back in the middle of the night, I just had a meltdown and screamed out of desperation that this isn't gonna work. You know, like, it's gonna be a breaking point. I can't live a life like this, you know. And it was 3 months into this relationship. We had been together though for 4 years. No, I didn't tell her what to do next. I just was being honest. I was probably just really being truthful. Like, you know, I don't know how long this is going to go. So she went out and started working the program. She started working the 12 steps and she got sober and is still sober today. And, you know, fast forward to 2017, I was probably stopping going into the rooms and then things would get rough again. Well, she got sober in 2015, but then she wasn't going to meetings, so then I would drag her to this Friday night meeting where they had an AA and an Al-Anon meeting. Even though she was sober, I still would drag her in there, and she'd be crying, literally crying in the car. But I would go to my meeting, she'd go to that meeting, she'd walk out, and she's like, yeah, I feel a lot better. It was a good thing I went in there. But it wasn't until I started doing the step work, she challenged me, you know? And I'm realizing now in my relationship with her that we challenge each other, that there is competition in my marriage, for sure. But it's a good competition. We're challenging each other to grow. We're challenging each other to work on ourselves, you know? And I don't think it's a conscious thing that, we don't have that, like, conversation about that. But She challenged me, I remember, in 2017, I think, about, you know, if you were to do the 12 steps, because she was already doing 12 steps, you know, it would be amazing to watch your life. I would just be blown away to see what you could, you know, what would happen. And I really heard that, you know, it really resonated. And you know, it's my wife. I really want her to be happy. I want to show off. I want to connect with her. I want her to love me as best as I can, you know. And we're newly married pretty much. We're still only a couple years in on it. We're trying to get pregnant and there's a lot going on. I'm building a business. And I knew that at that time that she was right. I knew it. She's always right. It's the truth. I just don't want to hear it always. You know, I don't always want to face the facts, you know, and really look at it because it's a mirror in my face, you know. She's not mean, she's not cruel. But, you know, I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to hear it. I'm willing to not be pushed back on it. And not always, of course, but most of the times I'm really trying to be open and work on myself because I want the marriage to work. And I want my business to work. And I want to be a successful person in society. So that's when I started doing the 12 steps. And my sponsor was in the rooms. And I definitely was attracted to those conversations that he was sharing. And I was really impressed with his recovery as much as I didn't want to be seen. And one night, as I was contemplating about asking, my sponsor was coming out of that regular Friday meeting and I almost hit him with my car. And she was in the car with me and she's like, what the hell? And I got up, oh, I'm so sorry, you know. He's like, I'm fine, this thing's great, you know. And I just felt like that was an ohm or something. Like that was like the universe saying, like throwing me in front of him, you know, type of thing. And so, yeah, so I got the guts and the courage to call maybe a few months later and ask. And my wife was there listening to me talk call and do this, you know, and he said, yeah, absolutely, I'd be honored to be, you know, sponsor. So that's when it all started, really, was in 2017 when I started doing the step work. And my life really unraveled, it started growing again. Not unraveling, it was unraveling the fact that I started looking at myself. So I started realizing doing the 12 steps that I had issues, behavior problems, wow, from the beginning. I mean, I go back to kindergarten being brought into the principal's office and him saying, like, I don't paddle kids anymore, but if you come in here again, I'm gonna paddle you. Like, this can't happen. And that behavior problems, I would say today, as I stand in front of all you right now, I still have behavior problems. You know what I mean? They're still there. I still have these defects. I still have, you know, I still have to really respond and not react. I still have to work a program. I have to. But now I have the tools. I have all of this information that I didn't have before. And I didn't know that I was really disabled coming out of an alcoholic home. You know, I just didn't know any of this. To be honest with you, I was really just in the dark. And I think that was the beginning of the steps, was they saying, hey, so first we're gonna do is we're gonna turn the lights on in the room. Uh-huh. You know? Lights on in the room. What does that mean, you know? So we turned the lights on in the room in the first step. And I could start seeing things and start looking at the truth of my life and starting to see my behavior and seeing my part in things, seeing my fear. And it was really gentle. It was really this beautiful thing, you know? Like going home, talking to my wife, she was kind of pissed, like, where are you going on Saturday for 3 hours at a time or whatever, you know, working with my sponsor. But I knew I had to do that work and I was really committed to it. And I was really, and I know that today, you know, but I knew I had to do the work and I was just gonna give it my all, no matter what it took. And I was willing to work the steps and do everything I can. And my sponsor has been wonderful. He's totally been supportive 100%. You know, there's always taking my calls, no matter what the situation is or whatever my crisis is or whatever is going on with my wife or anything like that. But I was able to understand where I came from. You know, I came from an alcoholic home, and I was doing the best I could, really, is what happened. My parents got divorced when I was 8. And there was always alcoholism. My mom was a RN. She had gotten hurt, and she was always bedridden in the house. And as I look back now, I can just see that she was constantly intoxicated. You know, she, you know, I would get in trouble at school in high school, basically, and the principal would say, yeah, we found your son. The police picked your son up today because he was going snow skiing with his friends, and they were doing donuts in the parking lot before they went to school because it snowed. And so somebody called the cops, and then we get pulled over, but we were all meeting up at school and hopping in our buddy's car to go skiing. You know, we're like, screw it, it's all the snow, we're gonna go have fun. And then they pull us into the principal's office, and then he's looking at us like, you know, you guys are a bunch of waste of time, you know. I mean, I look back now, looking at all of these authorities, just shaking their head at me, just always looking down at me, just always, you know. And I always thought I was better. I thought I knew more. I'd always had a big mouth. I was always able to tell them how it was. I was able to explain things, but I also thought I was the cool guy. You know, I thought I was the guy that got along with everybody. I was popular. I knew everybody. I went to all the parties, but I really wasn't connecting with anybody. And so I remember the reason I was explaining to my mom is that I remember the principal calling her saying, I have your son here. He was just picked up by the police. You need to come to school and pick him up. He was going to play hooky and go out skiing with his friends, and I'm going to suspend him for a week. And she's just screaming through the phone, you're suspending him for a week after he didn't already want to be in school? Yes. Well, so you need to come pick him up. She's like, I'm not fucking picking him up. You send his ass home how you want to, because you're sending him home, and I think that doesn't make any sense. So I was dealing with a parent that was not able to communicate well with the authorities at the school and explain, like, there's problems here, you know? Like, I was acting out ever since I was really young. You know, when I was in fifth grade, I remember throwing rocks at cars with kids at night when I was in another kid's house that I would hang out with whose parents were also not around. Nobody was around, you know? We were just kids starting problems, tearing shit up. And through the step work, I realized, like, I was screaming for help for a long time. A long time. And I was always attracted to the kids that were also screaming for help too. You know, and I always thought before I did the 12 steps, like, hey, I really just like hanging out with bad kids because we have more fun. But that really wasn't the truth. Now I'm looking back and it's like, no, because that's the only kids that I could connect with, that I understood, that we got each other, you know, because we're both coming from a bad background. We both didn't have parents that were around just to parent us, or you know, we were all completely, I want to use the word where we're just totally, like, their parents are checked out. We were, we're being robbed, basically, of the basic tools that a parent should be giving a child by not having the parents around, and the parents are always out doing their thing or being loaded. So that's who I was attracted to, and that's who I was always hanging out with, you know? And now I'm sitting here at this table, and I'm just watching these kids die, or these adults, these grown adults die from this disease. And so that was high school, you know, and I got through high school. And the other problem about high school was that I loved it. I did like the school. I liked the kids. I liked going to school. I always, you know, my mom would say to me, hey, dude, like, I'm not going to school. You're going to school. So you need to get your ass up and get yourself to school. And I'll get you a car or whatever. But I'm not, you know, she just wasn't there. I mean, she was a buddy. She wasn't really I love my mom. I was born on her birthday. She's a beautiful woman, and she did her best. But she had this disease, you know, she had this horrible disease. And so me and her always got along. I don't think I ever yelled at her, ever. We were great. But so I got out of there and then made it through high school somehow. I had learning disabilities. I didn't read forever. I just really felt, you know, that just wasn't my thing. And I was gonna prove the world I could make a lot of money without going through school. And so I came out, you know, so I got out of that. I did have my mom did remarry. My parents got divorced at 8. My mom remarried. She remarried this psychologist. who was also a full-blown alcoholic, but he was a loving guy, and he was the only parent I really had. He really would look at my schoolwork, and he cared, he would talk to us, he was always with us. He gave us a life, too, that where we could be at nice schools and we were cared for. And he was older, he was much older. So the reason I bring up him is because, you know, it just was that alcoholism was everywhere and everybody was dealing with that disease in its own way. And I think that, you know, that story of, you know, doing the 12 steps is that I always thought, well, you know, in the beginning stages that it was really about, you know, well, I just got robbed, like not having parents that were saying, no, he's dyslexic and he just needed more tutoring and he needed more support and I needed parents that were checking in on me. And I felt like I really didn't have a chance at school. It wasn't really my fault. And as I did more step work and we got through more things, I'm realizing like, no, I was an asshole from day one. You know, really, what? I can't blame my parents for this shit. You know, because there's a lot of kids that have alcoholic parents and they still can go to school or they still are able to read better. I mean, I have like problems, right? And it just got worse for me or was harder for me because, you know, we had a dysfunctional family and then I had more issues to be educated that wasn't being supported. And then the other piece was that I was just free to roam and do whatever I wanted. I was always like, you know, I didn't have any strict parents. I didn't have somebody say, well, where are you? What time? And I could go out for 2 days and come home and be like, where have you been? Like, oh, I was over at my buddy Seth's and then went here and then there. And you know what I mean? There was no really, I mean, I was like this 15-year-old smoking cigarettes, riding my moped and had girlfriends and, you know, I mean, I don't know. I was like this little adult in a way, but I was this pain in the ass kid. And so the step work got me to understand that whole process of how I got to where I was. So I got out here and I came out to California because I wanted to be an actor because I just always wanted to do that. And I was going to show everybody that I could do that. So I came out here in the beginning and I was really, I did fine for myself in the beginning. But at the same time, you know, I look back at it, but I was still so dysfunctional. I still was still had so many issues that I really couldn't get. I was always just kind of chasing my tail. I was always losing the jobs or I was always, you know, I couldn't evolve or every year or two I was starting over. And it was just a cycle I was in. So I fast forward that I did go to college finally. I went back home at 21 and I went to college and I got a degree in acting. And in college, I got through college and I did really well in college somehow. I could do college. And then I came back out to California and, you know, fast forward to time, I was 26, so I was like 36. I just ended up basically finally, you know, I would move around a lot. I think in 6 years or 10 years, I would move every 6 months to a year. I was doing geographical constantly. And I didn't want any bills, and I didn't want any commitments, and I didn't want any responsibilities. And I thought that would be the greatest life. And I was doing weird shit. I would like take off and like say, I just want to get out of here for a while. I need a break. And I would go, I found some guy who needed help crewing a boat from the Caribbean because he bought a boat in Germany. And he was going to, if I flew to the Caribbean, then I could sail the boat back to LA. And I thought, oh, that would be cool. I'd get a break and I could sail on a boat. And I did lots of these things along the way, you know, so, and it was awesome. You know, there was times where I did really good stuff. There was also times where it's like, I'm surprised I didn't get in trouble and I didn't get hurt. You know, there was those moments too. But I got to do things within that 10-year period, the time I was like 26 till I was 36 and then after I went through college, when I got out of college, I thought it would be cool for the church I was going to be a missionary in El Salvador. And I don't know how that came up, but I just was like, I don't even know. And the priest at the time was like, you want to go, I'll send you down there. And I was like, yeah, I might as well go down there. I could learn some Spanish and just check it out and see where the money's going, you know? So I went down to El Salvador and I was sitting up in those mountains and I was my head imploded down there. I was like, what did I do, you know? Because I was in the middle of nowhere. I couldn't speak any Spanish. But it was so Alanotic what I had done. You know, I totally did a geographical. It was after college. You know, and I remember my aunt going up to the priest saying, if he dies, I'm coming to get you. And I remember the priest going, like, he's like, well, what do I have to do? He asked me to go, you know. But so I went down there, and I had these amazing experiences in El Salvador. It blew my mind. I met amazing people. I did, got to do service at the time. And I was always into God. I wasn't against this whole God theory at all. I thought I was close to God. I thought that me and God were cool, you know, the whole time. So when I got into the 12 steps and into these rooms, I wasn't like, you know, God, don't start that with me. You know, I was like, oh, I could chill on God. I'm cool with God. You know, I like meditating. I like, you know, all my stuff I was doing and in my insanity. I was wanting to be, have a relationship and a higher power and a spiritual connection. But at the time, I didn't know that that was gonna be the big piece of me finding myself, you know? So I was after college down in El Salvador. I was there for 6 months. Then I got in a fight with the priest, I was having problems there. I blew that shit up. I didn't stay the whole time. And this guy wanted me to go back up to another village. And I was afraid if I went up there that I would get kidnapped because it was dangerous. But it was bullshit. I was just screwing up again. I was acting out on authority, and that's what I did my whole life. You know, I hated authority. I didn't hate them. I just was challenging authority. And that was a big piece of my step work when we started talking about authority and how authority works, you know, that, you know, our parents basically are our first gods. Our parents are the ones that were there to protect and care for us. And our parents were the ones that kind of gave us our first relationship with God. And my parents were a big disappointment in a lot of ways. I didn't think they were, I mean, but they were, right? So they were just, let's say, they weren't disappointed. They were, you just couldn't count on them, you know? They were lying to you. You didn't know if they were gonna show up always. You just, you know, they were like a buddy or something. They weren't really, you know, my stepdad, Ira, I could totally count on him. You know, whatever he said was word, he taught me. Whatever you say is what you say. If you lose your word with me, it'd be hard to get it back. So he always taught me a lot of big principles. So the authority thing happened through the step work, where I realized I had major problems with authority. And then I look back too, and it happened even in kindergarten. I was running around this room and not listening to the teacher. It was always there, you know? It was always me having problems with following the rules, you know, thinking I was special, you know, principles over personalities, basically. I was special somehow. And I don't know if I was special somehow, I just didn't get it, really. I feel like I just missed something, or I just wanted to challenge everything because, or whatever. You know, I went to El Salvador, got in a fight with the priest down there. Before you know it, he goes to another retreat. He says, when you get back here, you have to leave the seminary. And I said, really? And I go, well, what are you gonna tell the priest up in Ohio? And he's like, I don't care about these people. I'm like, wow. So I basically just picked up in the middle of the night and had some dude take me to the airport and bailed. I just went back to Ohio. And then it's like, how do you explain that to the parish? How do you explain that? Like, you're not, like, so I get back there and the priest is looking at me going, what are you doing? You know, and I said, well, it didn't work out down there. You know, that guy wanted to move me to another place and he didn't ask me about it. I'm a grown man, you gotta talk to people. It was just that whole authority thing. You're dealing with like old school, third world culture, you know? And it wasn't, I had really no place to really question or ask, like, well, we need to like talk about this. You can't just ship me off. I mean, I'm kind of down here as a volunteer. I had no tools. I had no tools is what it came down to. And it happened time and time again. So I got out of that and I came back and then I ended up coming out here and, you know, I got a sales job and same thing, you know. I couldn't deal with authority. I was trying really hard at that job. It was a big job for me. And I would just act out on my manager and say, like, I'm sick of you calling me and why are you still asking me stupid questions? And, you know, I just look at it. And so I was able to really start seeing my part in everything. I was really starting to open my eyes. The lights turned on, you know? And now, you know, I was being told, now we can get you to start. Now that the lights are on, you can see straight. And I don't want to get you to move your head around. Start turning. So you can start seeing more of like, what was the picture, what happened? And so that really started happening naturally. And it was so great. My wife is saying to me, you're on a pink cloud or something. And I'm like, pink cloud? What the hell is that? She's like, you're so damn happy. What is this, you know? And I said, well, I mean, I just know that life's going to be okay now. I just know that I'm going to be, I just felt like everything was fine. I found a way. I was growing again, you know? And that's what she was watching. She was watching me mature. She was watching me have more understanding in my life. She was watching me just be happy to grow. Yeah, just be happy to be alive and find gratitude for the first time in a long time, you know? So through this stuff, I had the sales job, I lost that, and that's kind of like when everything kind of fell apart. Like it was just getting worse for me. I was just not able to really pump. So then I started just doing side jobs and pretty much just kind of living in like people's garages or like bullshit weird places like for a long time. And that's how, you know, I ended up at one time in the Caribbean sailing around, and it was a magical time down there, but I was really just kind of like a dropout, like a society dropout, you know, that I could go and find some weird situation where I got to sail. And I knew at the time it was special. I mean, I got to see amazing things and meet people from all over the world and do things, but I wasn't really, you know, I was broke and I was like living like, it just, you know, I guess I got to do cool things along the way during my really dysfunction. I gotta get out of here in 2000. And I think it was 2008, 2007. I had to go on one of my other crazy ass trips, and I went to Thailand because I was taking care of this woman who was really sick with Huntington's chorea, and she had died. And I saved the money that I made while I was taking care of her. And there I was again. I was with an alcoholic. I was with the drug addict. I was with somebody who was very sick, and I was enabling them as an Al-Anon, and I was being paid to do it. But at the same time, this is what I was attracting in my life. I was attracting the disease everywhere. And so some friends were like, hey, we're going to Thailand. And I didn't have a job at the time. It was in 2008, recession was rolling in. So I went over there and I thought, well, we just went over there to party for like about, I went for a month because I was like, I went so far over there. I said, I might as well stay for a while. And I fell in love with it. You know, I really, really, really loved the culture. I loved the religion over there. And I thought, maybe I could just build a life over here and do something. So I did, you know, I had that month there, hung out with these guys that were from LA that kind of took me there and showed me around. And then I came back to LA and I sold all my stuff. And I went back to Thailand and I taught English for about 6 months. Now, before that happened, I was taking care of this woman who had Huntington's chorea, and she died, and I was with her till she died, and she died of liver failure, ultimately, even though the Huntington's is another thing. And so I watched the whole process of the liver shutting down with Jane, and that was really important at the time because it gave me a lot of understanding. So I went, then after that, I went to Thailand, I taught English, and I learned a lot in Thailand about the importance of family and how, like, if we had a break, they would say, I was like, where are you going now since we have 4 days off? And they're like, I have to go back to the countryside. I have to go see my grandparents. And I have to pay my respects. And I would say, pay respects? What's that all about, you know? And so I was thinking of things a lot differently when I was there. So I get a call from my mom, who I knew had liver failure. You know, she had been taking pills and drinking heavily for a long time, and I knew she had a bad liver. And I'm talking on the phone, and she's telling me, like, you know, she definitely over-exaggerated, overreacted. You know, she was alcoholic, so everything was like, I'm gonna die since I was a little boy. You know, like, I'm gonna die, and you guys are gonna miss me and all this shit, you know. But this time when I was in Thailand, and I was thinking about things and respects with families, she called and she's like, I'm gonna die. And I heard it, You know, I really heard it. And I was born on her birthday, but also, you know, I just buried that other lady to get, you know, before that kind of, that assignment before was I buried this woman. And but I heard it, and I was, you know, so I thought, oh. And there was guys talking about, they go home and they're breaks and they pay respects and stuff. I'm like, maybe I should go back and see her, you know? Maybe I should get out of here and just check in with her and see what's going on. So she said to me, I want you to think about it for a day or so. And then if you feel strong, you can come here. And I was like, okay. And she was in Maryland. So I was slept on it, and I just, you know, I was meditating at the time, and I woke up and I thought, man, I think I'm gonna go. I think it's time to go. Even if I go for a little while and she's okay, at least I spent time with her and I pay my respects. So I get there on a Thursday. I think I get there like on a Tuesday, and I'm hanging out with her and she's talking to me. And she's got oxygen on, and she's definitely ill, and she's in hospice, you know, and that was the other piece of it, that she's in hospice. My other siblings are like, dude, she's gonna die forever. People go into hospice for years. She's fine, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, why are you going away from Thailand to see her? Like, that's ridiculous. And she gets on the phone, and she's telling everybody, hey, Matt's coming home to be with me so I can die. And they feel like shit. But I went, and basically she died in a week. And at the time, I didn't understand anything about alcoholism. I had no idea of this disease. I just thought, oh, my poor mom had this liver thing, and now I was able to hear the call because I took care of Jane, and I watched her liver shut down, and when I was talking to her on the phone, she told me about what her liver was doing and where she was at, and I was like, you're advanced stages of liver failure. And so I just was fortunate enough, or my higher power was able to get me there in time to be with her. And I had no idea it would be that fast. I mean, I took her to the dentist on a Thursday, and she was dead on Monday. You know, and she's walking around the house, and, you know. So my life changed. Woo, it's changed. And I got to be with my stepdad when he died. So I had some experience with death. And he also died of alcoholism too. I mean, he drank himself, you know, he drank himself in where he had a stroke, and then he had a trachea, and he was super sick, and I was always with him too before he died. So for some reason, I was handling this death thing, but I did have a huge awakening when he died, because it scared the hell out of me. My two fears, my two biggest fears ever, was to be a parent and lose my stepdad. So I lost my stepdad, and something else lifted over me. Something changed where it was like, this is totally okay. This is natural. We all die. It's no big deal. There's a huge acceptance over it. So when my mom was sick and she was dying, she said to me, you know, when I die, and I was with her, like, I was like, yeah, it's cool. You can die. We're good. You know, like, it's cool. And I said, I don't know where I'm gonna be after this, but, you know, so I did sit with her and was with her bed and turned her. I did all the stuff, you know, and I really was there for her and rallied around that, and I was at the time acceptance, but when she's gone, it all switched. Everything changed. There was another lifting, and there was another something, but I went down for like really hard. So for a year, I was not functioning. I'd shaved my head because I wanted everybody to know, or I wanted myself to know, that my mom died and I'm dealing with the shit. And so I thought, well, I'm gonna shave my head every month for a year. And that's what I did. And my siblings were like, well, you're just dealing with your shit. And they all, you know, they all went on and did their thing. But I really feel like that's when the alcoholism in me, I just wasn't doing well. And I was basically homeless after that. That's where I just didn't have a job. I couldn't get work. I had no place to live. And I was staying at friends' houses. And I did that for about 2.5 years, maybe, where I was staying at other people's places and all this kind of thing. I think my mom died in 08, I met Betsy in 2011, and that's where I was really desperate, and I realized that something was going on. I also had a lot of confusion, because I didn't know why my life wasn't working. I didn't know why I couldn't keep a job. I didn't know why I didn't have a place to live. I didn't know why. And I was also just an Al-Anon, so everything was pushed down, and I was like a ray of sunshine, and what's going on, and how can I help you, and life is good and great, because I wasn't feeling anything either. I was really just totally, I was just getting sicker and sicker is what was going on. So, you know, I met my wife, and I was willing to do the work, and I feel like something with my mother's death changed things, where the desperation of like me figuring things out was much greater. And I think it was like maybe when I was looking at her in her casket, I was thinking to myself, like, it's gonna go fast and you better get your shit together now. Because if she's dead, how long am I gonna be around? You know what I mean? Like, it's gotta go. This is real. Like, we're in a real game here now, you know? And so I think that there was a switch too where I was more open to just trying to make my life work or reinvent myself or try to find a new way. So there I was, I came back to LA and I met my wife, at, you know, my soon to be wife at a party. And then, you know, I'm trying to figure out how I can make it work with her because I was so desperate at the time. I went in these rooms, it was really great. I did start doing step work. And my life was starting better immediately, you know. I started sleeping better, I started feeling better. I mean, the fact that I just felt like a relief, like I'm gonna be okay. You know, when I started the 12 steps, I mean, I had the step where I really felt like I was gonna be okay. And so much, I mean, so much, you know, has changed now where I feel like the Al-Anon is basically like, it's my foundation. It's like everything that I can build off of now. Now I have the tools to work on myself and to build a business, be a dad, you know, because that was another thing that was really hard. You know, we had fertility issues and I didn't want to be a dad. I was scared to be a dad with an alcoholic. It scared the hell out of me. Like, how does that going to look, you know? And I still have that fear. Like, what's going to happen if she dies? What's going to happen if she can't be a parent for whatever reason, because we have this disease of alcoholism. But I do realize that, you know, I'm here to put the focus on myself now. I'm here to know that my higher power is taking care of all those things. I don't have to sit there and figure it out anymore. You know, I can call you guys, I can, you know, do step work, I can do my service, and know that her recovery is between her and her higher power. And I say that every day in my work. You know, I when I pray in the morning and do my readings, you know, when God gave me wisdom to know that her higher power, that her recovery is between her and higher power. And it really has helped me a lot not getting in her business. I still get in her business, but it's not as intense, you know, and I'm gonna catch myself from doing it and leaving her alone. And I just feel that's been relieved though too, where I came in here just thinking about her, wanting to make her feel comfortable because she's gonna make me feel better if she's okay. Where now it's such a big, it's like, I'm okay, you know? I'm okay. And it's like, no, before I was okay if she was okay, but now I just feel like I'm okay. Like I can be. And I hear the stories in the rooms. I hear people talking about, you know, what they're going through. We're all going through this together. We're all going through this life together and sharing our stories and our struggles, you know? And it's just transformed me. You know, it's totally transformed me and not trying to be controlling her and not trying to always give her my opinion. And I've realized recently with her where I just would not talk about recovery with her at all. I would never get into, well, you know, step three says this, or Al-Anon is like this, or whatever, because we just get in a huge fight about what happens and what it's about. It never, never, ever isn't. I'm never helping her if I try to help her when we talk about these things. It just doesn't. But, you know, recently I was thinking, you know, I was talking to somebody and I think that I can talk about 12 steps with her, but not about her 12 steps, if that makes sense. So I can't just totally just say, well, I don't want to talk about you because I would use a principle on that and you're not going to get it anyways and that's going to start a fight. So now I'm learning, I'm growing the aspect that, no, I could come in and we can talk about, like she's talking about her work issues. And before I would step back, I'm like, I don't know what else, you know, your principle, this or that, you know. But now I'm like listening. And I'm like, you know, this was this week. I said, you know, I have really like a crew of people around me, like that I go to, that I share these issues that I have with, because me trying to figure these problems out is not good, and I'm usually gonna hurt myself. So I just know that I don't have the answer for you, but I know that if it was me, that I would go to my sponsor and ask them about, you know, this conversation I'm having with the person that's upsetting me. And it worked. You know, I was sitting in my room yesterday and she's telling me, I gotta get an Al-Anon because I think I'm gonna lose my job. Boy, I've been sitting here 2014. I mean, I'm waiting for her to have some type of, you know, she's growing, but more, you know, I would love to see her grow too, you know, and be successful. The other thing that's been happening too is that I'm able to start seeing her assets. I'm able to start seeing her talents and her gifts that she has. And that's recent, you know. I'm already been doing this in like five years and doing the steps now. And just now I'm starting to see her and her mastery. So I'm working on this thing for my work of creating content. And I have this background with the video, and you know, she's screaming, she's losing her shit and yelling, and the baby's running around, and I'm like looking at her, I'm thinking, well, I gotta get this done. Like I really wanna get this done. And she's like doing her meltdown thing. And now I'm thinking to myself like, no, but she's a genius. And it's worth the pain of letting her struggle or scream or whatever and making me uncomfortable, because I know if she actually helps me on this, it's gonna look great. I didn't realize it before. So our partnership is growing. It's really, really growing together, where I'm able to see her beauty, her talents, and I'm able to like let her be her more and freak out and know that if I can do that and not beat her up and not say screw it then, because before I just say screw it, I'll put it all away, we'll do this another time, or I'll figure another solution, or you know, I would just act out on her. Now I'm like, no, I understand, you know, I would just know, like, I just have to be patient with her. I just have to be more understanding, like, it's harder for her, you know, like, but, you know, I know that as an alcoholic, she's walking around basically, as I've been told in these rooms, that she has no skin on. So everything that she feels is like 100 times more sensitive to what's going on. And that's why she's overreacting on everything. And now for her, it's not overreacting because she's in a lot of pain. To me, I'm not in that kind of pain because I have more skin on me, I guess, and I'm not as sensitive as she is as an alcoholic. So I have to be more understanding of what's going on with her and more understanding of her process. And I feel like that by doing that, she's coming back too, and she's being more understanding of me and my desires and my wills. It really has been magical. You know, because that also goes back to the fact that I was like, I don't know how I'm gonna have a kid with somebody who's an alcoholic. That scares the hell out of me. So now I have a 2-year-old daughter that we were able to have, even after having fertility issues, that was a big headache. And we're doing it. We're doing it. I have this beautiful daughter that would not be here if it wasn't for this program. You know, she really wouldn't. And she's doing great and she's thriving. And what's so interesting too is somebody that's in here in the room tonight was saying, you know, I can see that you're the structure for your daughter. And that was powerful. You know, I came in this weekend thinking like, you know, I'm the one that's like, okay, I wake her up this time, I get her to preschool, I get her showered, then I have to pick her up, then I got to bring her back, and then I give her a snack, and I do it. So I have this, it's all routine, you know, with her. And my wife comes in on the weekend and she's like, oh, she's been sleeping for 3 hours because I'm tired. And I'm like, well, I guess she's the mom. Who am I to tell the mom what to do? You know, I'm like, that's her right. I gotta leave her alone. And like, I know right now that house is probably sitting there upside down trashed from the bottom to the top, because that's just what they do. You know what I mean? Like, but that's their thing. That's what I say, that's their thing. And so, but I am the guy that has the structure. I am the one that tells my daughter, hey, like, this is gonna happen now, we gotta get this done. You know, and she'll push and push and push, but I'm like, well, you can push if you want, you know, we gotta get it done. Where my wife will sit there and she's like, well, you know, she's gotta go up and I gotta give her a bath. And I'm like, well, when's that gonna happen? She's like, oh, we'll get to it. You know, so I'm just saying like, but that's her thing. You know what I mean? Like I she does the nights, so I don't have to worry about it. Where before Al-Anon, I would have been probably screaming at her going, dude, it's 8:30. She's going to be asleep, right? Like I would be beating her up, trying to manipulate her to do what, but now I just chill. And she has a right to be a mom, and she has the right to figure those things out on her own, and me trying to not get in the way of their relationship. And so it's been really exciting too, because this week my daughter, if my wife is in the house, it's all about mom, mom, mom. And just the last week or two, she's looking for dad, if mom's in the house for the first time. And so she's getting jealous. She's like, she's not interested in me anymore. She just wants you, you know. And that's really nice. But I think that goes back to the structure piece, that I think that she sees that I'm really consistent, and that she does like the routine. She does like the structure. She does find more, maybe some more security in me and my arms and what I'm doing, and that I'm not overreacting or yelling weird, or, you know, I'm more of that monotone, you know, kind of, you gotta be chill and not freak her out type of guy. And I'm not perfect either at doing that. But it has been really, this just wouldn't be happening if it wasn't for you guys. That's just the truth. I wouldn't be able to be a dad. And I definitely still wouldn't be a husband. And it's, I know that this is important for my soul. When I, you know, I started with step work, I was kind of pissed for a while because I was like, I wasted like 10 or 15 years of my life. I didn't waste any time in this life. Every minute has been a gift. It just feels so great to feel my emotions. I just feel alive. I feel like I'm growing. I feel like anything's possible. I feel like I'm getting all the love that I didn't have for so many years, and it feels amazing. And I'm so open to just keep growing and learning more and seeing where this is headed, because I'm just so grateful. I'm just really grateful for this program, for all of you guys, for my life. For my wife, who's totally, I would say, forced me to grow to be the man I am today. She didn't force me to do anything. She gave me the avenue to look at myself. She gave me that. A chance to live again, in a way. A chance to really find who I am. You know. And ultimately, that's what I wanted, and I knew it was serious, and boy, has it paid off. It's just so, it's bigger than I could ever imagine. I wish I knew where I was on my time. We're good?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I love you all, and I thank you so much for coming this weekend.